5 o'clock. This is FM 90.1 KZFR Chico. Listener supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. Stay tuned for Ecotopia and North State Give and Take. Keep it on KZFR.
This is KZFR 90.1 Chico, community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. Up next, Ecotopia.
You don't know what you've got till it's gone. They paid paradise, put up a parking lot. They took all the trees, put them in a tree museum. And they charged the people $1.50 just to see them. Don't it always seem to go that you don't know what you've got till it's gone? They paid paradise. Put up a parking lot. Hey, farmer, farmer, put away the DDT now. Give me spots on my apples, or leave me the birds and the bees. Please, don't it always seem to go that you don't know what you've got till it's gone. They pay paradise, put up a parking lot. The screen door slammed, and a big yellow taxi took away my old man. Don't it always seem to go that you don't know what you've got till it's gone? They paid paradise, put up a parking lot. I said, don't it always seem to go that you don't know what you've got till it's gone? They paid paradise. Put up a parking lot. We pay paradise. Put up a parking lot. We pay paradise.
Put up a parking lot.
Ecotopia is made possible by the generosity of its listeners and by the Chico Certified Farmers Markets. With year-round weekly markets in Chico at 4th and Wall on Saturdays and the North Valley Plaza on Wednesdays, plus Tuesday markets in Paradise. The Chico Certified Farmers Markets, linking farmers and food lovers since 1980. We want to remind you that the opinions expressed on Ecotopia do not necessarily reflect the views or opinions of KVR staff, the management, programmers, volunteers, or underwriters. Tonight's program features Susan Chudy in an interview recorded just a few days ago with Cherie Chastain. She's chair of the Chico Climate Action Commission. This was a Zoom call, and it included a few gibbles and gobbles that you'll hear right at the beginning. But stay tuned, all was restored. Here's Susan's interview with Cherie Chastain.
Our guest today is Cherie Chastain. She is the Director of Energy and Sustainability at Chico State and Chair of the Chico Climate Action Commission. A few weeks ago, the Chico City Council proposed pretty much out of the blue that the commission be demoted, and that's my word, not theirs, to an ad hoc committee, and then wrote an ordinance for last Monday's City Council meeting, the public response was overwhelmingly in favor of maintaining the commission, and the motion to change from a commission to an ad hoc committee died for want of a second. So, you are still chair of the Chico Climate Action Commission. So what's the difference and why was this important, the difference between an ad hoc committee and a commission in city government?
Typically, an ad hoc committee is a temporary committee, is a committee established for an immediate need. And then once that immediate need is addressed, the ad hoc committee typically dissolves. A commission, on the other hand, is formed by an ordinance, and a commission is appointed and directed by City Council. In order to get rid of a commission, an additional ordinance would need to be passed and adopted. And so a commission has a bit more longevity, not a bit more, a lot more longevity and a more formal and official standing within city operations.
So how did the commission originally come into existence?
The commission came out of a committee, which was actually the Sustainability Task Force. And the Sustainability Task Force did have two evolutions, or I guess one evolution, two iterations over the course of many years. It was initially formed, and I wasn't part of that initial formation, nor did I sit on that initial task force. And so I'm a little fuzzy on the exact details. But I know it was formed, sometime between 2005 and 2010, somewhere in there. And then it was reformed again with a bit more formality to it, with members that were actually appointed by City Council. There were seven members on the last iteration of the Sustainability Task Force. And that Sustainability Task Force scope was much more clearly defined than initially. Initially, it was just kind of anything sustainability related. With the second iteration, it became very focused on climate action. And so our scope became targeted at reducing greenhouse gas emissions from the three measured sources of emissions within the city of Chico, which are transportation, energy, and solid waste. And I guess maybe we'll talk about the climate action plan here in a little bit, but that the climate action plan was really the impetus that led to the formation of the actual Climate Action Commission, which we have now, which was first established towards the end of 2019.
So who established the climate action plan, and who wrote the original climate action plan?
The original climate action plan was written jointly by City of Chico staff and Chico State University experts. So there was a group of folks who got together who were the primary authors, city staff and Chico State University folks. There were dozens of contributors into the initial climate action plan, which was the first climate action plan was adopted in 2012. That outlined two phases of projects that should have been worked on towards by the end of 2020, with the explicit purpose of reducing greenhouse gas emissions 25% below 2005 levels by the year 2020. So that was the initial climate action plan that was adopted.
And what do you think, and we'll talk about the update in just a second, but what do you think the impetus, where do you think that came from to change from a commission to an ad hoc committee? Because it's sort of surprised everyone, I think you included, right?
It did, yeah. I think it surprised everybody. I really honestly don't know where that came from or why that recommendation was made. I can certainly make assumptions, but I honestly don't know where it came from.
And so you just woke up one day and said, what?
Yeah. During the council meeting, I was getting some texts from folks who said they're voting to get rid of the Climate Action Commission. And I was like, what? I thought the agenda item was to get more commissioners. So it caught a lot of people off guard, certainly.
And so now the Climate Action Commission is still functioning, and you've been doing a lot of work. So When did you begin the update for the Climate Action Plan? And can you tell us a little bit about how that process has gone?
Sure, absolutely. We started in 2019 recognizing that we were approaching 2020, which was when the first Climate Action Plan took us through. And so we recognized we're going to need to update this plan. We, you know, we're approaching the term that this Climate Action Plan was intended to address. And so we were still a task force at that point in 2019. And we began doing some public outreach and some listening sessions so that we could hear from folks, you know, what an update to the Climate Action Plan might look like or should look like. At that same time, you know, there was some movement within City Council to formalize the Sustainability Task Force into a Climate Action Commission. And we had seen that done in several other communities around California. And so there was also a budget line item that was approved to hire a consultant to update the Climate Action Plan. So all of these things were kind of happening at the same time. We as the task force knew that we wanted to get a jump on updating the Climate Action Plan. So we started the public outreach and doing some listening sessions at the same time as funding was awarded to hire a consultant to write the plan. And then the work within City Council to formalize the Climate Action Commission all kind of coalesced at the same time, which was in late 2019.
And so it was your charge from the City Council to update the plan. I mean, that was...
That's right.
The City Council directed.
Yes. Right? Yeah.
And so at what point, and so at some point, we'll talk in a second about the actual details in the plan, but at some point, the City Council, you're advisory to the City Council, and so at some point, the City Council will adopt the plan. We hope.
Yes, that's the intention. You know, it's been a long process since 2019 to, you know, today. But we do have a plan, a climate action plan update that the Climate Action Commission voted on in September to adopt. And we have made a formal recommendation to City Council to adopt the climate action plan. That at this point, I believe, is scheduled to be on the October 19th City Council agenda. And so that should be going to council, you know, here in 2 weeks.
Oh, okay. I didn't realize that it was that close. Let's get into the nitty-gritty of the Climate Action Plan, what it is, what it's intended to do. You already referenced kind of the three major areas. So what is the major goal or goals of the Climate Action Plan?
Right. The main overarching goal is to reduce greenhouse gas emissions 40% below a 1990 level baseline by the year 2030, and then further reduce it 80% below the 1990 levels by 2050. So you'll notice from the previous Climate Action Plan, which had a baseline of 2005, we've now moved our baseline back to 1990. This is more in accordance with state mandates and with, you know, other communities that have adopted similar goals across the state of California. So really, we're looking to drive down emissions. That's the bottom line.
Right.
Yeah.
Can you give us a general description then of the plan?
I would love to. Yeah. So the plan has four main target areas that we're talking about, and they're based on the sources of emissions, but also potential sinks or places that we can draw emissions out of the atmosphere and sequester them into our soils. So we have actions and measures around mobility and transportation. We also have measures around buildings and energy use within buildings and waste generation. I see you're, you good?
Yes. Okay. I remember several months ago that the CAP had 20 strategies outlined for diminishing greenhouse gases. And so can you go into more detail about what those are? And I think I've looked at it fairly recently, and it seems pretty detailed.
It is. It's very detailed. And so, again, going in those four segments of emissions, mobility, buildings, more specifically energy use in buildings, waste, and then sequestration. There are 13 main measures, and the language is semi-important here. So we have 13 main measures, and then we have within those measures 56 more specific actions.
Wow.
So each one of the measures then comes with, in some cases, just one action, but in other cases, there can be up to seven actions per measure. So the 13 measures, again, fall into these four categories. So there are four main measures on energy, and a lot of those focus on electrification. So getting ourselves off of natural gas and electrifying at the same time that we're adding renewable energy generation into our grid mix. And then on the transportation side, there's five key measures in the transportation section. Each one of those, there's then 27 specific actions on the transportation side of things. Wow. Transportation is the largest source of greenhouse gas emissions for Chico State, for the city of Chico, for the state of California, for the nation, you know, globally, as well. Transportation is the big thing that needs to be addressed there. We have one measure in the solid waste section, and that comes with seven specific actions. And then on the sequestration side, there are two measures totaling seven actions that we are calling for within the plan.
Does all this cost money for the city?
Yes. Yeah, of course.
Is there a budget?
I mean, are you, the development of the plan or actually doing the measures?
Actually, the development of the plan, I know, involved some budget for the city. But doing the measures, do you have a budget that they will need to think about or create?
Yeah, the Climate Action Plan outlines some potential expenses. You know, it's hard to really quantify exactly what some of these things are going to cost. But the consultant did a good job of, you know, outlining here's maybe roughly what this project might look like or what this action might require. There are, what I'm really excited about in the Climate Action Plan, and, you know, we hear so often, well, who's going to pay for this and how are we going to fund this? There's a whole chapter on funding and financing as part of the Climate Action Plan. So the main consultant that we hired had a sub-consultant specializing in finances and funding, and they've outlined several pages, actually, of potential funding mechanisms. There's a lot of grants, there's a lot of incentives, there's a lot of state funds that are available, there's a lot of organizational and philanthropic funds that are available. And so within the plan, there are live links that can actually take people to some of the funding sources that are specifically targeted at the measures and the actions. So it breaks it out, you know, for building electrification, right? Here's a whole list of funding resources that you can look to help pay for these projects.
So is this electrification, that part really interests me because we've interviewed people who've talked about the potential for electrifying is all there. We have the technology to do that. And so it's interesting that there's any resistance whatever to that. But are you talking about electrification of like city buildings? Is the university involved in this? What are the kind of, more about the electrification?
Right. I mean, the electrification is an exciting one. And we heard as part of the development of this plan, we brought in some developers who, one of them actually did an all electric, I think it was an apartment complex, the one that he specifically spoke about. And he, from his perspective, it actually saved his project money to from the ground up build an all electric housing unit. While Chico State's an interesting one because we are technically a state entity. And so we don't necessarily, the city doesn't necessarily have 100% oversight into what the campus is doing, right? We're more managed from the state level. But we're all in at this at Chico State. So we're, absolutely investing in electrification here on our campus. We have much more aggressive climate action goals than the city of Chico. At Chico State, we're committed to achieving carbon neutrality by 2030 for scopes 1, 2, and 3 greenhouse gas emissions for the university. So we have a really aggressive goal. And that's, you know, that's most of my job here on campus is to help campus meet carbon neutrality. And we're doing that. We're building a new building, for example, a new behavioral and social sciences building. Construction will start next summer. And that building is slated to, at this point, be a fully electric building. You know, the design team has come forward with some really great ideas that we're all really excited about. And, you know, I do not foresee there being natural gas connections at that building. So it's definitely practical. You know, there are a lot of folks all over that are investing in electrification.
Are there incentives for builders and homeowners as a part of the climate action plan to electrify?
Well, there are incentives identified within the climate action plan. They don't necessarily come from the city of Chico. You know, I think there was some conversation. I can't remember exactly what the language ended up being in the plan, but we did talk about potentially streamlining permitting. And, you know, the climate action plan calls for the development of ordinances that will move electrification forward within the city of Chico. Right. So those ordinances have yet to be written. And that's where we're going to need some of that public engagement moving forward as some of these ordinances are developed. You know, is permitting streamlined as part of the ordinance development? Is that one of the criteria that's included in there? Are there other incentives that we could possibly provide? And I think those will be important conversations that we'll have to have with the building community as we move forward with these measures and actions.
What is the source of electricity for Chico? What will be the source for, if you're electrifying everything that you possibly can, what's the source of electricity? Is it mainly hydro or?
Well, right now it's PG&E. And so it's whatever contracts PG&E is procuring for the power that they're supplying to their customers. Now, the state of California has mandates on percent renewable that has to be in that mix. That's the Renewable Energy Portfolio Standard. And that currently, I think it's 35% right now. All utilities in the state of California have to have a minimum of 35% of their power coming from renewable sources. It's primarily from wind and solar. There's a little bit of biogas mixed in there. The regulations around hydro are a little bit fuzzy. They're fuzzy to me. I mean, I'm sure somebody knows them really well. But in some instances, hydro is not necessarily considered a renewable source of power. Now, the state of California is driving a lot of this renewable energy generation, right? So they've passed legislation that says that by 2045, 100% of the power in California will be from renewable sources. You know, that's only 25 years away. That's before our 2050 target that's within the city of Chico's climate action plan. My personal opinion is that that's too far away. You know, we need to act a little bit sooner than that. The legislation that was passed, which was SB 100, does have some interim targets. And it was 50% by, I have to look this up. I can't remember what year they were supposed to reach the 50% renewable energy. Let me see if I have that. 50% by the end of 2026. So that's only in 5 years. 60% by the close of 2030, and then 100% by 2045. So the state's really driving a lot of, they're kind of forcing the renewable energy adoption. Now, at the same time, you know, the Butte County area is still moving forward with the formation of a community choice aggregation. Yes. Butte Choice Energy would be the name of it. And so I hear that that's been delayed. And so I understand that that's not going to be launching this coming January 2022, but that it'll be launching the following January 2023. I believe that's accurate. Mm-hmm. What that would do is that gives local procurement power into where we source our energy. So the local joint power authority, or JPA, can decide, you know, we're going to source from these large solar farms or these wind farms. Biomass, I think it has huge potential in our region, especially as we work to prevent these mega fires that are just absolutely devastating to so many people and communities and environments in California right now. So I see that has some potential, especially in our region, for our CCA as they begin forming.
So can the city or the state, could, like, for example, could the city of Chico create a solar farm or create a wind farm in order to achieve some of these goals? Or is that just crazy?
I mean, anything's possible, right? I mean, there certainly isn't anything stopping them from doing that. I don't think that makes sense for the city. I okay. think, you know, it makes sense for, you know, a power developer, somebody who does that, builds large utility scale solar, you know, on private land, or maybe in partnership and in public-private partnerships with the city or even the university, to, you know, start developing larger renewable energy plants or locations, farms.
Right. So in order to meet the state goals, there's got to be a lot more of that happening, right?
That's right.
Is the state providing some sort of backing for people, or, you know, incentives again to get people to be doing this is a big step. There, a lot needs to happen.
You're right. So yeah, it's a huge step, and there's certainly a lot that needs to happen, you know, and this is my personal opinion. You know, I don't know that taking up land, you know, say 500 acres of land for a giant solar system is the best approach. I think it's certainly one approach. But if you think about our built environment, there are so many rooftops here in Chico, in the state of California, that are perfect candidates for solar. There are incentives to do that. There are tax credits for that. There are incentives through the utility to do that, the self-generation incentive program. So there are incentives to do these things. You know, I think we're going to see that happen a lot more, the solar in combination with batteries and battery storage. The batteries, I think, are going to play a really critical role in our climate resilience strategies, right? So as we start to lose power in either a public safety power shutoff situation, or, you know, an actual emergency where, you know, the utility system is maybe knocked out for a while, having these batteries coupled with renewable energy generation will help create some utility resilience that will allow us to still function, you know, have refrigerators kept cold, medication chilled, cooling centers for folks that are vulnerable to extreme heat. You know, I think we're going to see a lot more of that. And I think there's a lot of potential here for some of that localized to happen rather than, you know, removed from the community.
Our guest is Sheree Chastain. She's the chair of the Chico Climate Action Commission, and she's talking about the Chico Climate Action Plan, which is working to achieve zero CO2 emission in the next 2050, but the state is asking for it before then. I want to move on to transportation, because, as you've said, transportation is huge in terms of CO2 emissions. And can you talk a little bit about the plans there for transportation and how to make big changes in transportation?
I was just pulling up the plan to remind myself. You know, I've been spending a lot of time on alternative transportation work here at my time at Chico State. As I mentioned, it is the largest source of emissions for Chico State, the largest source of emissions for the community as well. You know, there's a lot of things that need to happen here. One, we need infrastructure. So we need bike paths, we need accessible locations, accessibility to some of the infrastructure. People need to feel safe in whatever mode of transportation they're using, whether that's a bike or walking or a scooter or on the bus using public transportation. And so we need to make a lot of investments in the actual systems that make people feel safe. So adding lights to areas that are dark, you know, on a bike path, something like that. So we need to kind of create the systems that are safe and accessible for folks. But at the end of the day, it's personal choice and personal decisions. And, you know, I think it's really unfortunate that at least in most of the West Coast, when you go somewhere, your first instinct is to grab the car keys. You know, it doesn't matter how far you're going.
Right.
If you're going around the block to go to the drugstore, you're going to grab your keys and you're going to go there instead of maybe taking a walk. You know, it's just it's something that for some reason has been conditioned into all of us. I think it's a very West Coast thing.
Except for big cities, you see it all around the country, you know, except for places like New York and Boston, and where you do try to take, it's easy to take public transport.
So. It's a bit easier, yeah. Every time I go to the East Coast, any big city on the East Coast, they have great regional transit. You know, you hop on a train or a subway or the bus system. You know, that's lacking in California as a whole. We're lucky that Chico is a really bike-friendly community. You know, I ride my bike every day to work and, you know, go to the market or errands. And it is a really bike-accessible place, but there's a lot of people who are not as comfortable, say, riding a bike down a street, a busy street that maybe doesn't have a bike lane. So that's what the plan calls for, a lot of those infrastructure improvements, like adding bike lanes, adding bike paths, improving safety, like lights, you know, cleaning up the paths, picking up debris and litter on the path that could puncture a tire or hurt somebody. Adding mobility sharing to the community. So having, you know, shared scooters or bikes that folks can use. You'll see that in, you know, most other big cities at this point right now in the United States. Mm-hmm. You know, that I think that has huge potential for us, and connecting different pieces of transportation, right? So maybe you live a mile from a bus stop. Maybe you can ride your bike to the bus stop, put your bike on the bus, ride the bus into downtown, you know, or maybe there's a bike share system or the electric scooters or bikes that you can take one of those to the transit center and then ride that home. Maybe there's a docking station near your home or in a community, right, that would have these multiple docking stations. So combining different modes of transportation, like a shared mobility or your personal bike with, say, regional transit to get around, I think there's huge potential for that. And we do call that out in the Climate Action Plan as a recommendation. There's also some general things that can be done at a city level. We call it in the plan, we call it curb management. So looking at different things like the metered parking pricing, maybe we have some tiered pricing where it's more expensive to park a car downtown during peak times to maybe deter you from driving a car downtown during a peak time. Maybe hop on the bus or ride a bike or find another way to get there. And then I would be remiss if I didn't talk about electric vehicles. That's going to be a pretty big strategy here, right? There's a lot of folks who don't live downtown or even within a reasonable biking or walking distance from their work or their grocery store or their school. You know, maybe you have to come down the hill. Electric vehicles are, we definitely need to be expanding both the infrastructure for electric vehicles as well. So making sure that folks who are coming from our rural communities, you know, that's, we do live in a rural community here. And so folks that are coming in from outside areas like Concow or even down from Paradise or, you know, from outside areas that they can charge when they get here to Chico. So adding that charging infrastructure and kind of increasing the adoption of electric vehicles. And, you know, the state of California, again, is kind of forcing us into that. You know, they're passing legislation to ban petroleum-fueled cars in the future. You know, we're going to really have to start increasing the adoption of electric vehicles.
Right, right. I want one. I wish somebody would give me one.
Wouldn't that be nice?
Yeah. I would drive it every single day.
Well, if anybody's listening that has an electric vehicle they'd like to donate.
Yeah. Think of Susan Judy. Is there a plan, is part of the plan to electrify the bus fleet? Or the other thing that, and I think, you know, this is kind of a chicken and egg problem with public transport. You have to make it easy for people to get it in order for them to use it, but you have to get people who are willing to use it in order to do those kinds of changes. And so, you know, we see buses around town that are almost empty, two or three or five people on the buses. And so out in our little problem-solving world, we think, okay, smaller electric buses that run more frequently and run to different places. But the Climate Action Plan probably has some other ideas.
Well,
so what is the public transit plan?
Yeah, you know, the public transportation system is overseen by BCAG, the Buchanan Association of Governments, and, you know, they run the B line. And they were starting a feasibility study a couple months ago. I'm not sure where they're at in that process, but reevaluating their routes and where they're going, what times they're going to places. And, you know, I know that they're looking at kind of what you're saying here is, do you make a smaller fleet that has, you know, more expansive stops, or do you have fewer stops that kind of increase the travel time or decrease the travel time, but strategically place them in key population centers? And so I know they're evaluating their route system right now as the B line, and I know that they're always applying for grants to try to get electric buses. I'm always writing support letters for those grants. I can't remember if they've been awarded any funds for that, but I know that is definitely something that they want to do, is electrify the bus fleet. But yeah, there, you know, we've got a, I see it as well all the time. There's hardly anybody on the bus. And, you know, at Chico State, for example, we subsidize bus passes. So every faculty, staff, and student on our campus who has a Wildcat ID card can just swipe that ID card on the bus and get on at no expense to them. And it's not a heavily utilized service. You know, our students are using it in specific areas, and there are some bus routes that kind of target our student population, but our faculty and staff hardly ever use our bus system, even though it's no out-of-pocket expense to them. So yeah, we've got some big things to deal with when it comes to public transportation.
Well, and one of the problems that we have just in general with kind of climate change across the board is that people haven't understood that they can't live the way that they've always lived, that there need to be personal changes in lifestyle. And, you know, even I have really good friends who are really committed to trying to be better in the world that buy a lot of stuff. and we just can't buy as much. We just can't do everything that we've always done and live the way that we've always lived. And I don't think anybody wants to hear that message.
I think you're right. You know, I think you're right, 100%. I mean, yes, we need a climate action plan for the city of Chico, right? We need to know what our path is. We need to know where we need to make investments, when we need to make those investments, how we're going to transition some of the hard stuff. But, you know, like I've said, at the end of the day, it's all of us and the decisions that we make. My entire professional career is asking people to change. And people do not want to change. I've frequently thought about my work in sustainability as cultural engineering. That's really what it is.
Really interesting.
Engineer a culture of change, right? We have to do things differently. I'm saddened, but also optimistic that the natural disasters that we've experienced in our community have really grounded this in reality. Climate change is not this abstract thing that's out there and may or may not impact us. We don't really know. It's impacting us right now. It's impacting, I think, Butte County so incredibly severely over the last 5 years. And people are starting to recognize, like, oh, dang, this is for real.
Right.
And, you know, again, that makes me sad that it takes natural disasters and, you know, people's direct impacts to their person in order to make some of these changes. But at the same time, it might be the kick in the butt that we all need to actually get up and do something. And it starts with every decision that we make. I mean, everything that we do, from the clothes we wear, the food we eat, how we move around in our communities, how we communicate with one another, how we talk to people, all of that has huge implications for addressing climate change. And we all need to do better, every one of us.
Let's go on to the last couple. I want to make sure we have enough time for everything. The waste piece of the climate action plan. And then at the end, if I've missed anything, you can go back and say, oh, yeah, this is important too. But what is that?
So the waste is...
Part of the plan.
Yeah, that's mostly targeted around organics. Organics going to the landfill is the source of greenhouse gas emissions. And so there has been, again, state of California legislation, SB 1383, that passed that requires and mandates that we divert organics from the landfill. When I say organics, I mean food, but also yard waste and other material like paper products, right? Paper towels, that kind of thing. So most of the climate action plan circles around composting and organic diversion from landfill, which then dovetails nicely into the sequestration recommendations.
Yeah.
And the sequestration recommendations are all about drawing carbon out of the atmosphere. Right? That's what got us in this spot to begin with, is we've extracted so much carbon, combusted it primarily through transportation, fuel, and energy use, released it into the atmosphere so much quicker than we're putting it back down into our soils. And so while we do need to stop emitting what we're emitting, we also need to focus on drawing that out of the atmosphere and putting it back into our soils where it came from.
And so,
so composting is a great way to. Oh, pause for a second.
There you go. No, we're good. So composting is great, and
we're back.
I think we're back. Oh my gosh, internet instability here too.
There you go.
Downtown Chico. Okay, so talk about how composting does that, and then who's doing the composting, and how that's the city can help with that.
Yeah, you know. I can't remember. I don't think the plan calls out specifically that the city invests in composting. I think if I'm remembering correctly, the plan is calling on our waste haulers, the people who service the waste in the city of Chico, to make investments in composting facilities. Composting and compost applications, and this is something that we're studying here at Chico State as well, is understanding, you know, how does compost build soil biology? And then how much carbon does that actually draw down out of the atmosphere? There are lots of studies that show that composting does accelerate how much carbon is stored in our soils. But like I said, we're in the process of measuring that for Chico State right now. So I'll have some better numbers once we get there. But composting not only helps to put carbon back into the soils, it also retains moisture. Which helps in this drought situation, this extraordinary drought situation that we're in, being able to retain that moisture in our soils and allow moisture to percolate back down into our aquifers is going to be a really important resilience strategy moving forward. And I see composting playing a pretty important role in that whole process.
So is regenerative agriculture, is that one of the goals of regenerative agriculture, to capture CO2 emissions, or or is that kind of a separate thing?
Well, that's certainly a piece of it. Yeah, building the carbon content of soils is one of the main principles of regenerative agriculture. And how you do that, you know, how you increase the carbon content of the soils, there's many different paths to get there. But yes, that's the crux of regenerative agriculture, is getting there. I think a lot of folks, I think this is an important note to make right now with regard to the Climate Action Plan in the city of Chico. We don't talk about regenerative agriculture in the Climate Action Plan, and that's semi-intentional. The Climate Action Plan is intended for the city of Chico, of Chico boundaries, and there's very little agriculture within the city of Chico boundaries. So regenerative agriculture, I think, is going to be a really key strategy in the Butte County plan, which is under development right now. As Butte County updates their general plan and updates their climate action plan, you know, agriculture and regenerative agriculture are going to be a big part of that. But for the city of Chico, that's an important note for the listeners. That's why it's not included.
So what have we missed, Sheree? What are some other important things about the climate action plan that we haven't touched on, and what are kind of your, where is your like biggest piece of your heart in all of this?
You know, the Climate Action Plan, it lays out a really clear path, I think, that the city of Chico needs to be taking. And it outlines a whole bunch of different actions that need to be invested in, need to be acted upon. But one of the encouraging things is that a good deal of what's called for in the Climate Action Plan is already underway. Our city staff in the various departments within the city, from engineering to public works to community development to operations and maintenance, already moving down this path. And I think it's important to recognize that. You know, there's a lot of folks that think the city's not doing anything, and they are. All of these departments are contributing, and they are doing some really cool things that are called out in the plan, and they're already in progress. They're not waiting for the plan to be adopted. They're already moving forward with it, which is really exciting and encouraging from my perspective. My heart, that's such a tough question, and I get that question a lot. You know, I don't know. I think really I just want the community and my community, my neighbors, my friends, my coworkers, my acquaintances to recognize their personal contributions into this. You know, like we were just talking about, we all need to do better. We all need to make changes. And those are the things that also reinvigorate me to keep going is, you know, when somebody makes a change in their life, like maybe they stopped using plastic bags, I'll consider that a win, you know, or maybe they started composting at home, or maybe they just bought a bike and they're going to try commuting somewhere, even around the corner to a friend's house on a bike. It's those little personal changes that kind of keep me going, I think.
This might be a hard question, but, and I don't know if you completely want to answer it, but what's going to be the heavy lift when this goes to City Council? What do you think is going to be presumably they will have read it and understand it, but are there going to be controversial parts of it? Is there going to be a fight over this?
I certainly hope there's not going to be a fight. You know, I don't feel that anything in here is explicitly controversial. I think the building electrification is going to be the one that's going to receive the most pushback. We did hear from some of the builders associations as we were developing the cap. They did provide public comments and they provided some feedback in that. And you know, I don't think that they're necessarily opposed to the idea of electrification. And so I hope that the plan itself is not a contentious fight. Where the rubber is going to hit the road, though, is as the plan is implemented, and as I was mentioning, as ordinances are written, that's where we're going to need people at the table to make sure that the ordinances that are written and adopted are done so in a way that there is large and widespread community buy-in. And those were some of the comments that, you know, we received during the public comment period was, well, how is this going to work and how is that going to work? And the response is actually, well, we're going to figure that out. We'll figure that out as we write the ordinances. You know, we just need to first adopt that this is the path we're going to take. And then we can have these dialogues and conversations back and forth to figure out exactly what shape that might take.
Is there a plan, or do you need people to come to City Council to support the Climate Action Plan? Should I be putting out a call to my environmental friends to come to City Council and make sure that people in Council see that this is something that the community really cares about?
I certainly hope so. I mean, I would like to think that we have put together a really solid plan that, you know, covers all of the key points and the areas that we need to cover, but also provides, like we talked about, funding opportunities and how we're going to pay for all of this. So I certainly hope that there is a large showing of community support. You know, based on the public comments that we received during the public comment period, I get the feeling that there is a great deal of support for the plan. And I think the community does want to see this move forward. So even if you can't be at the council meeting on October 19th, you know, you can send emails to council members, or you can provide some written public comments urging the adoption of the plan.
And then what is the role of the commission once this is adopted? What will you all be doing next?
So the commission moving forward is then going to make sure that we are staying the course. You know, we're going to hear from the key stakeholders that are outlined within the Climate Action Plan. We will be inviting them to our meetings, and we're going to stay abreast of the progress that's being made on each one of these measures and actions. We'll be looking to get progress reports. We'll be looking to put together potentially some indicator reports and then communicating that back out to the rest of the community and letting everybody know how we're doing on meeting some of these goals. So, you know, conducting our greenhouse gas inventory. You know, we haven't done one since after the campfire.
Oh, wow.
You know, city's changed a lot, you know, so updating some of our numbers and metrics, communicating that back out, but then also making sure that progress continues to be made on all of these measures.
And I also understand that there are applications for a seat on the commission. What sort of changes will this bring to the commission?
Well, yes. So I wanted to make sure to mention that they will be going out for recruitment for commissioners. And so for anybody interested in serving on the commission, I certainly hope that you complete an application. There's going to be five open seats on the commission. It's a 7-person commission. So we need folks. We need at least five really good folks to join us in this work. My hope is that we end up with a pretty diverse commission. You know, I would love to see somebody from the building community on this commission. I'd love to see somebody from the transportation world on this commission. You know, I think we would be well served to have differing voices, you know, making sure that we are moving forward in a way that represents our whole community. So, I can't remember exactly when that's going to go out, the call for commissioners, but it should be soon.
At the city council meeting, they said that they had applications, but it wasn't clear to me if they were going to extend the application period to recruit new commissioners. So I guess people should go to the City of Chico website to find that out.
Yeah, I've been told from staff that they are going to go out for a larger recruitment. So those applications should be expected. Yes, the city clerk is the one who manages recruitments for commissions. And so they might have more information on packets and when the deadlines are for submission, that kind of thing. I'm sorry, I don't have those dates.
No, that's okay. People can find it out if they care.
Yeah.
Find out. Anything you'd like to add? This has been extremely informative. Even though I've followed the commission, this was such great detail. Thank you. Anything you'd like to add to this?
No, I think we've covered all the high points. You know, we've put together a plan that I feel good about. I'm excited about this plan, and I hope the rest of the community agrees and shows support for adoption of the plan, and then is willing to join us on the commission to make sure that we're holding true to said plan.
And October 19th is an important date.
October 19th, yes.
Yes. Our guest has been Cherie Chastain. She's the Director of Energy and Sustainability at Chico State and the Chair of the Chico Climate Action Commission. Thank you so much, Cherie. You've worked so hard on this for so long, and I, for one, and others I know really appreciate your work. Thank you. And thanks for joining us at a busy time for you.
Thanks. Thanks, Susan and Stephen. It's always wonderful to talk to you. I appreciate it.
You've been listening to Ecotopia on KZFR. Stay tuned at 6 o'clock this evening. Just a few minutes from now, it's Bobby Tryon with North State Give and Take, interviewing some of the movers and shakers around our town. We also want to remind you to tune into the Dr. Gail Show this coming Thursday at 6 p.m. Gail will be talking with families that have had businesses in Chico for a number of years. Also stay tuned tonight at 6:30. It's Ginger Nichols with Radioactive, a mix of selections of great contemporary music as well as Ginger's commentary on current affairs of interest to all kinds of listeners. This has been Ecotopia. Thank you for listening.
You are the music. Up next is North State Give and Take, and it's made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by the Cotton Party, offering contemporary women's clothes and accessories with an emphasis on natural fibers in the heart of downtown Chico. Cotton Party has been providing friendly service for over 30 years and is located at 337 Broadway Street. Cotton Party is grateful for your